Watching the Rails. This is your FinTech industry briefing. The U.S. labor market just delivered a data point that should fundamentally alter how we think about banking economics for the next 18 months. January 2026 employment data reveals that 144% of job growth came from government and government-adjacent sectors. Let me put that in context. Under the late Biden administration, that figure averaged 84%. The pre-COVID historical baseline, just 31%. We've moved from a market-driven labor recovery to something that looks more like direct fiscal intervention masquerading as organic growth. The broader fintech pattern here isn't just about public versus private sector employment ratios. It's about what this structural shift means for the fundamental economics of banking and financial services infrastructure. When government dominates employment growth to this degree, we're looking at a triple squeeze on traditional banking revenue streams that forces a complete rethinking of competitive positioning. First, credit demand compression. Corporate America is generating profits and retained earnings faster than it's adding headcount. That means companies don't need traditional lending the way they used to. They're funding growth internally. For banks, that's a direct hit to commercial lending portfolios, one of the core profit engines of the traditional banking model. Second, we're seeing private sector job openings contract at negative 62% annualized rates. That's not a typo. We're matching COVID crisis levels of private job opening contraction, but this time there's no pandemic forcing the issue. This is structural. This is what AI displacement looks like in the macro data. Services payroll growth registered just 0.1% on a three-month annualized basis. We're watching a textbook jobless recovery, but this time it's being driven by automation and AI, rather than manufacturing offshoring. Third, the fiscal trajectory itself creates additional headwinds. The federal deficit narrowed from 6.8% of GDP in 2024 to 5.4% in 2025, but now it's widening again to 6.7% in fiscal 2026's first trimester. That U-shaped fiscal policy pattern historically correlates with GDP acceleration, but it comes at a cost. Treasury issuance volumes surge, which pressures securities portfolios and drives up funding costs for banks. Net interest margins get squeezed from both directions simultaneously. Reduced loan demand on one side, higher funding costs on the other. Looking at the regulatory landscape, this creates a fascinating geographic arbitrage in banking strategy. Institutions serving government-heavy markets gain stable deposit bases. Government employees tend to maintain predictable cash flows and conservative banking relationships. But that stability comes with concentration risk. Meanwhile, banks positioned in private sector-dominant regions face near-term credit weakness but maintain diversification advantages that matter more as we move through economic cycles. Now, let's talk about the disintermediation pattern that's accelerating across financial services, because what's happening in wealth management right now is a leading indicator for broader banking disruption over the next 3 to 5 years. Industry data shows independent financial advisors are growing significantly faster than wirehouse and bank-affiliated channels. We're seeing negative net advisor flows at major institutional platforms. The established players are losing talent, and they're losing it to smaller independent firms that theoretically shouldn't be able to compete with institutional infrastructure. But here's what's actually happening beneath the surface. The traditional banking bundling strategy, where you cross-sell wealth management, deposits, lending, and insurance products across a unified platform, is breaking down because of structural constraints that prevent optimal client outcomes. Product distribution requirements force advisors to recommend proprietary products even when better alternatives exist. Compliance limitations at large institutions prevent proper risk management customization. Static asset allocation mandates work fine in normal markets but fail catastrophically during tail risk events. Technology has democratized the infrastructure that once created insurmountable barriers to entry. API banking, cloud infrastructure, embedded finance platforms, these tools allow independent advisors to offer sophisticated services without maintaining legacy core systems or branch networks. The competitive moat that came from institutional scale is eroding rapidly. This pattern extends far beyond wealth management. The same technological democratization enables non-bank competitors to offer banking services across multiple verticals. Embedded finance means fintech companies can integrate payment processing, lending, and account management directly into their platforms without becoming chartered banks. They're capturing banking economics without accepting banking regulation. For major financial institutions, this creates a strategic paradox. Regulatory compliance costs favor scale. The bigger you are, the easier it is to absorb the fixed costs of regulatory infrastructure. But simultaneously, advisors and banking talent are defecting to models that can serve client interests without the structural constraints of large institutions. Banks face a choice: compete through regulatory moat deepening, or pursue structural transformation toward modular, client-aligned service delivery. Most are trying to do both, which is probably the worst possible strategy. Now, we need to talk about what happened in precious metals last week, because the flash crash in silver and gold exposed infrastructure vulnerabilities that extend well beyond commodities trading. Silver fell 12% intraday to just under $75 before recovering. Gold dropped $150 to $48.79. These weren't small moves, and they happened despite historically low managed money positioning.
Typically, you'd see around 50,000 COMEX contracts and managed money positions during volatile markets. Right now, we're at just 5,000 contracts. So this wasn't hedge funds dumping positions. This was something structural. Former JP Morgan bullion executives have confirmed what was actually happening mechanically. As gold doubled from $2,600 to $5,000 and silver rose 157% from $28 to $72, value at risk models at major banks mechanically halved their allowable position sizes under fixed dollar-based risk limits. Simultaneously, implied volatility exceeded 100 basis points, which eliminated traditional market making economics entirely. When volatility is that extreme, banks cannot profitably provide two-way liquidity because the spread capture gets eroded by position risk. CME warehouse data shows 153 million ounces of silver withdrawn recently from a peak of 533 million ounces. Yesterday alone, 4.7 million ounces left the system, including 2.56 million from JP Morgan vaults. But again, managed money positioning remained minimal, which means this was institutional liquidation driven purely by risk constraints, not fundamental bearishness. COMEX raised margins to 15% with dynamic automatic adjustments, which amplified forced liquidation cycles regardless of whether positions were fundamentally sound. Looking at the regulatory landscape, this episode demonstrates how traditional market-making models break down at extreme price levels across asset classes. The same valor constraint dynamics could affect foreign exchange markets, commodities broadly, and derivatives trading during any significant volatility event. Banks require updated risk frameworks that account for position size compression as asset prices rise. Otherwise, they're forced to withdraw liquidity provision exactly when markets need it most. The 10-day Shanghai Gold Exchange closure created additional liquidity gaps, which highlights how global infrastructure coordination matters for market stability. When a major exchange goes offline during a volatility event, the remaining venues absorb concentrated flow that overwhelms their capacity. This isn't just about precious metals. This is about whether banking infrastructure can handle extreme volatility in any asset class without creating self-reinforcing liquidation spirals. Briefly on AI infrastructure, OpenAI just rolled out advertising in ChatGPT, which has marginal but non-zero implications for banking infrastructure strategy. The clearly marked sponsored content with standard privacy controls follows established digital advertising practices without introducing novel regulatory considerations. For banks, the primary relevance is cost optimization. Major institutions are deploying conversational AI at scale. Bank of America's Erica serves over 35 million users. JPMorgan Chase maintains OpenAI partnerships for internal tools. Right now, enterprise licensing costs run $20 to $60 per user monthly. Advertising-supported models could reduce those costs 30 to 50%, which matters when you're allocating $50 to $200 million annually for AI capabilities. More significantly, this validates OpenAI business model durability, which reduces vendor concentration risk for banking partnerships. Banks need confidence that their AI infrastructure providers will exist in 5 years. The advertising model provides an alternative revenue stream that makes that more likely. But let's be clear about what this doesn't change. This development doesn't augment infrastructure priorities around payment modernization, open banking compliance, or embedded finance strategy. Regulatory implications remain minimal. Chatbot advertising falls under existing digital marketing frameworks. However, banks using AI customer service tools should monitor data handling practices as advertising integration evolves, ensuring continued compliance with banking privacy requirements that differ substantially from consumer internet platforms. Pulling this together, the macroeconomic backdrop reveals fundamentally altered monetary policy effectiveness with direct implications for asset liability management frameworks. Treasury issuance volumes driven by 6.7% GDP deficits create structural pressures on yield curves independent of Federal Reserve policy decisions. We're watching fiscal dominance override monetary policy transmission mechanisms. Geopolitical dynamics compound this shift. Central bank gold purchases continue regardless of price volatility. Poland just added 150 tons to reserves. ECB gold holdings are now the second largest reserve asset after US dollars. These are de-dollarization trends that affect banking funding markets directly. When foreign central banks reduce dollar exposure, treasury demand patterns shift, which changes the yield curve dynamics that banks use for duration hedging. The AI-driven employment dynamics we discussed earlier compound these pressures. Private job creation lags corporate profit growth, reducing consumer credit demand, while corporate clients require less traditional lending due to strong cash generation. This combination pressures both net interest margins through reduced loan demand and fee-based revenue growth through reduced transaction volumes. Traditional Fed policy transmission mechanisms are diminished by fiscal dominance, which requires updated duration hedging strategies that don't rely on historical correlations between Fed actions and curve movements. When Treasury supply dynamics override monetary policy signals, banks can't use their old playbooks. Geographic and sector exposure rebalancing becomes critical over the 2026-2027 cycle. Government employment concentration creates regional deposit stability differentials, but it also creates concentration risks that will matter when we hit the next downturn. FinTech thesis update. What changed today is the recognition that we're experiencing simultaneous structural shifts across labor markets, financial intermediation models, and infrastructure risk frameworks. Government employment dominance isn't temporary fiscal stimulus. It's a structural reallocation that reduces traditional banking demand. Financial advisory disintermediation isn't limited to wealth management. It's a template for how technology enables specialists to unbundle banking services. And infrastructure stress in precious metals isn't an isolated event. It's a preview of how valor models fail under extreme volatility across asset classes. The rails are shifting beneath us. Banks that recognize these as structural changes rather than cyclical fluctuations will position successfully. Those that wait for mean reversion will find the mean has moved. Watching the rails. Until tomorrow.